Welcome back, my friends, to another audio adventure on Insight. I'm Chris Van Vliet. Thank you for coming back each and every episode. Can you believe this is episode number 201? Oh man, and the show's not even 2 years old yet. We officially turned two in June. So do the math. That means we're averaging like 110 episodes a year. And that is a lot of conversations. And I appreciate you being with us for each and every one of them. If I'm being honest, I didn't think that this conversation today was ever going to happen. But man, I am so pumped that Sincara, aka Cinta de Oro, is going to be on the show. Wikipedia, by the way, tells me that Cinta de Oro is Spanish for golden ribbon. I was not aware of that. But he has such an interesting story of growing up in El Paso, Texas, which is the same place where Eddie Guerrero grew up. He had a ton of success in Mexico, then spent 10 years in the WWE with a few different characters, with and without a mask. And then he asked for his release in December 2019, right before COVID hit. So we get into everything that he's been up to since. And I got to tell you, Cinta is bursting with charisma. How could you not like this guy? Take a screenshot. Let us know that you're listening. Share this with a friend. Tag us on social media. It's just our names. This is simple. I'm at Chris Van Vliet. He is at Cinta de Oro. And I don't know if you saw this or not. I've been posting about it a lot frequently, but I have a new YouTube channel where I've been posting some clips from some of my most interesting interviews. So it's appropriately named CVV Clips on YouTube. If you could toss me a subscribe on there, I promise you, we will be best friends forever. And hey, while we're talking about subscribing, take a second right now to subscribe or follow on whatever podcast platform that you're listening on right now. Podcast platform. This review made me laugh and also smile. This is from Bry the Heretic, who says, "Finally, after being an Android user that was also an avid CVV listener, I hated that I couldn't leave a review. I made the switch to iPhone, and the first thing I did was download the Apple Podcast app to leave this 5-star review. Great conversationalist with awesome guests." Well, thank you kindly, sir. And I appreciate that the first thing that you did after downloading or after getting your iPhone was downloading the Apple Podcast app and leaving this review. So thank you. And my birthday is coming up soon, May 19th. So we'll keep reading one review in every single episode till we get to my birthday. We're closing in. We're closing on that goal of 2,000 reviews. So if you're listening to this on your iPhone, on Apple Podcasts, or on iTunes, and you haven't left a review yet, please just take like 27 seconds today to just throw an emoji up there. It doesn't really matter. Just anything, really. Please. My guest today, you will know from his time in WWE. Please welcome Cinta de Oro, a.k.a. Sin Cara. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, man. Thank you. It's my pleasure, man. I'm excited to talk to you. And I think you reached out to me a couple of times, and I'm sorry that I never got back to you. I was going through a lot of things in my head. I still wanted to keep myself, on the down low. But I think it's time for me to actually now talk about a lot of things that, have gone in my career. And I'm just excited for the future, brother.
Well, look, there's no better time to do this interview than right now. So thank you for coming on. I'm very curious. When you wear a mask, how do you pick out your mask? You know, I pick out a T-shirt every day, but how do you pick out which mask you're going to wear?
Well, the idea of me is always like, I try to always combine like my shirt with my mask, or if I go out to an event, the things that I wear have to combine, because that's, I don't know if I don't know how they call that condition, because I'm always like, everything has to be in order.
Oh, like OCD?
Yeah, exactly. And you have to have like that. And I've always been like that. Everything that I've done, I remember, let me tell you a story. And I just remember, we were in Macon, Georgia. I think one time we had a show. I was traveling with El Rio, and we got to the locker room. And I remember that I got to the locker room, and he left. I don't know where he went, and he had his bag there. He always had like a bunch of mess in his bag. And I remember I put everything in order in the locker room. And then he comes back and he's like, "Where's my stuff?" I'm like, "It's right here, in order." He's like, "I'm not gonna find anything because everything that I had in my bag, I know how it is." But I've always been like that. Like everything has to be in order, and in my house, I know where my mask are at, like the things that I have. If somebody grabs something, I know who grabbed it. Like I've always had that. So when I pick out a mask, it has to combine with the things that I usually wear. Because in my head, I'm thinking like, oh, it doesn't look good, or it doesn't combine. And but I like that, you know. I like to be able to go always, you know, be in control in that sense.
You know, it's a little embarrassing for me to admit this, but since I don't speak a lot of Spanish, I didn't know that Sincar actually meant something. I don't know that everybody who speaks English realizes that this actually, you know, means it's faceless, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sincara means faceless. That's where the mask comes in, like that in the role where they cover your, it covers everything, you know, the eyes, the mouth, everything. And now with the pandemic, it's funny because people were always say, how can you wrestle with a mask that covers your mouth? I'm like, how can you walk with a face mask now? And people complain about it now because they have to wear this little face mask on their face. Imagine me working with this thing for 10 years or more.
Yeah. Is it easier or that much more difficult to wrestle with or without a mask?
Well, a lot of the guys, a lot of the boys would always tell me, like, how can you wrestle with that thing on? I feel like my face is going to explode because it's everything's inside. You don't get, like, what is it called? Claustrophobic or whatever. Sure. I'm like, no, I'm already used to that. And it's funny, like where I wear a mask like this, that I got to talk, I feel like I'm naked. It's funny. I don't know why, but I got so used to always covering my face, my eyes, everything. But then it's harder for me to talk in that mask because I'm like something on my mouth. But no. I just got used to it and wearing it, and it becomes part of you. It becomes a part of who you are. And for me, wearing a mask has always been, you know, my essence, who I am, my culture, what I've done in my life. And when I don't have it, the time that I was wrestling for a couple of years as Único, that was great. I enjoyed it a lot. It was fun, but I felt it wasn't me. You know, I felt something was missing, and it was the mask. And now that I, you know, wore the mask for many years now again, it's just been fun to be able to go different places and wearing a mask and people not knowing who you really are, because now I can have a regular life. Imagine some of the guys that are really well known, like when they go out to eat, when they go out to other places, it's hard for them to actually, you know, hide. Like if you see Orton in the street, you know, it's him. Even if you go up to me, he's not going to say no. He's like, no, I'm not Randy Orton. Like, it's him, you know? And for me, in that sense, it's a lot easier. Obviously, I have tattoos, and sometimes people maybe very recognize me, but they're very, you know, very polite. Nobody comes up to me or takes pictures of me or nothing. They just sometimes go up to me and like very like timid. Hey, can I ask you a question? And like, are you this guy? I'm like, yeah. And I would say, yeah, that's me. I said, oh, thank you, man, and this and that. And then they're like, can I take a picture? I'm like, well, I would take it, but my face is not going to be, you know, it's not going to sound the same as if I wear a mask, you know, in the picture. And they understand.
Well, but, you see Rey Mysterio in photos sometimes doing something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't like being that. I don't like being like that, kind of like that. I think the mask always is something better for the people. And when, especially when fans ask you for a picture, they actually want you with a mask. And what I've done, it's what everywhere I go, everywhere I travel, I always keep a mask on, and then either in my car or in my bag, in my backpack, for that, you know, for those moments, if people ask me and I'm able to do it, I'll do it. You know, I don't have a problem with that.
You said it, you know, feels like you wearing a mask. Did it feel like you when you were taking on this gimmick that had already been portrayed by somebody else when you were Sin Cara?
What did you ask me, Quinn? The question?
Did it feel like you were being you when you were playing the character that had already been played by somebody else?
Yeah, because I changed a lot of things over the character. I wasn't trying to wrestle like he was wrestling. You know, I was doing my own thing. I was putting my persona into this new chapter of Sin Cara. And it was crazy, man. When I got the call to tell me, hey, you want to continue Sin Cara? I was like dreaming, because I don't know if you know the story about the both of us in Mexico. I debuted in November 21st of 1999. As Místico in Mexico, in Ciudad Juárez. And then all of a sudden, like 2 years later, I never registered the name, because I didn't know that you had to register the name, go through all that legal stuff. So then the company in Mexico, Consejo, ended up registering the name Místico. And my lifestyle, they made it into a gimmick. Back in during those times, I was studying theology. I was, you know, doing missionary trips in Mexico. I used to get on the buses and preach. I used to get on the streets and knock on doors and doing all kinds of stuff like that. And so something that was my lifestyle, they made it into this gimmick for this guy, for Nacho. And it was tough, you know, because when everything happened, I think it was 2005. In 2004, I became a world champion against Psicosis, against Nicho in Ciudad Juarez. I took away the WWE middleweight title. And then all of a sudden, this kid comes in and saying, then Consejo starts announcing that, you know, this amazing star is coming up, and they say Místico. So a lot of the boys thought that it was me. And they would come to Juarez and they would tell me, hey, so you're going to go to Mexico City? I'm like, what are you talking about? And then all this happened. He became an amazing, you know, star in Mexico. It was just crazy. And then when he came down to WWE, I got hired first. And I was wrestling in FCW. And then a year later, he gets hired. And I'm like, man, like, what's going on? And then they do this big press conference in Mexico and announcing him, you know, as Sin Cara, and then he comes to the States, and he didn't even go to the school. He went straight to television. So then he came down for a couple of times. I remember the Dr. Tom Pritchard, which I love very much. He's an awesome trainer, an awesome person. He told me, I had a meeting with him. He's like, I understand if you don't want to work with him, you know, because I told him the story. He was like, no. I told him, I have no grudge on nobody. You know, I'm here to work. I'm to do the best that I can. And if I get to work with him, then so be it. You know, I love wrestling. This is what I'm here for. So let's do it. So he came down for a couple of times. We trained a couple of times, and then he went off on the road, you know, as he got out. Then he got suspended for, I don't know what he came out, what substance he came out positive for. And then that's when they actually put me in to be Sin Cara for in the beginning. That was before I got the tattoo in my hand. I didn't have the wings or none like this. And I was portraying Sin Cara for a little bit, and then we ended up doing the feud where he ended up, you know, staying with the name. I ended up becoming Único for a while. So it was just a lot of craziness. But when I got the call and they told me that, I was in shock, man. I was like, man, like I couldn't believe it, because during that time when they stole my name in Mexico, El Santo asked me one time, you should fight for the name and do all this stuff. And I told him, this is what I told him. And he even wrote a story about it. I told him, you know what? I have the best lawyer. And my lawyer is God. If something belongs to me, one day I'll get it. And if not, it's not for me. And then when that happened, I was like, man, this is insane. Like, God works in mysterious ways, you know? I'm a man of faith. So for me, you know, when that happened, I was in shock. I couldn't believe it. But it was also a lot of happiness. So what I did with Sin Cara, I was just me. I ended up changing a lot of the things in the outfit. If you remember, I had a cross in the middle of my pants. Yeah. I ended up changing the design completely for what they had for him, and I just made it mine. And I never lied to people. I never told them that it was him. I told people it's me. It's my time now. He didn't you know, cut out to be what they wanted out of him. Why not me now? And that's how I always had that mentality. But it was tough. Let me tell you why. Because imagine having this kid coming from Mexico trying to make a big star. And then especially during that time when Hunter was trying to show the boss that he could take over the company. Right. That was before NXT. And then he hires Big Con, remember? And then she had to leave the company. I don't know why the reasons. And then this kid, this is the biggest signing that he had from Mexico, comes in and he doesn't do anything. So in the eyes, I think, of Vince, it was harder for Hunter to think like, oh man, like, I failed twice now, you know. And then the decision for the name of Sin Cara, of what I know, it was made by Vince to give me the name. So I think I never got that opportunity or that support from Hunter, because it wasn't his project anymore. And if I succeeded, then it was a bigger failure for him, because he was the one that brought this kid from Mexico over to make him a big star.
So do you feel like that affected a push that you might have had?
Oh yeah, big time, because I wasn't getting that you know, inside support when they had those meetings, when they had, you know, trying to get people over in that sense. You know, it wasn't about, you know, about that anymore, because, you know, I remember when Nacho was portraying Sin Cara, he would always get opportunities all the time, even if the match wasn't good or something happened, or he said that he was hurt that he couldn't wrestle the next week, he was in the pay-per-view. He was doing this, doing that. And with me, it wasn't like that. You know, it was always like, I felt like I always had to do more than usual to show them that I really, you know, that I belong there. And that was tough. That was tough because, you know, I was there every week. I never failed, you know, whatever they asked me to do, I did it. Even if I didn't improve, I did it because I love my job. I love wrestling. I love what I did. And I understood, you know, it was part of what we had to do. But then it became like a trend all the time. All the time, Sin Cara, every time I would go out there, people knew that I was going to lose.
Yeah,
it didn't help the talent that I was working with because I remember a few times where I go out, I wrestle Samoa Joe. People already knew that he was going to kick my butt. And it was just tough because I don't know if you know a little about my background. You know, I was a high school wrestler. I wrestled in college. You know, I'm not a wimp.
Yeah,
I can defend myself. And it was just tough to be able to, you know, see some of the guys, you know, had that chance to succeed. And me just being, you know, in the back, just sitting down and watching all these guys coming up and getting that opportunity coming up. And then me just sitting down there and not doing anything.
But with that said, 10 years in WWE, what are you most proud of during that time?
Well, I got to travel the world. I got to meet a lot of amazing people. And I think that's the memory is nobody can take him away. When I was in the ring, nobody could take away my talent. Down there, they could write whatever they wanted and the politics, whatever. But when you're in that ring, it's just you and the people. Mm. And that they could never take that away from me. And I think for me, that was the main thing. I got to do amazing, get to meet a lot of amazing people, travel the world, you know, get to know a lot of people throughout, you know, my life and everything that I accomplished. But obviously it took a lot of work too. It took a lot of time because I was out of my house for many years and I missed a lot of things of my kids. But I think the most thing, you know, that I'm most proud of is the memories that I made, the friends that I made and the relationship that I built throughout my career. You know, obviously I'm not a perfect person, but you talk to a lot of people, they're going to say like, I'm very loyal. I'm a loyal guy. If you're my friend, you're my friend for life. Yeah. And if not, I can't be like in that, like if I don't like you, I don't like you. Simple as that. And if I get it back, I understand, you know.
Is there a match or a storyline that you're particularly proud of?
Well, I got to work with Andrade when he first came up. And let me tell you why I'm very proud of being able to work with Andrade. Is because I met him when he was 14 years old.
Wow.
I got to go to wrestle in Gomez Palacio. That's where my dad's from also. And that's where he's from. So I went over there. I remember we were in a hotel room with a friend of mine, El Cobarde Jr. And then he comes in, this kid comes in, like little skinny kid, like, hey, ¿cómo estás? How you doing? And this and that. And then he tells my friend, El Cobarde Jr., he tells, hey, I think I'm gonna go to Mexico City, see if I make it. You know, I'm gonna try it. I'm gonna go next year when I turn 15. I was like, what? So he left when he was a little kid, 15-year-old kid. And then he became this, you know, this legend over there, La Sombra. And then all of a sudden, like, he became this big star. I got to work with him in one tournament many years ago in Latin America, the only time that I wrestled there many years ago as Incognito. And it was just, you know, it was great. And then we came to the company and he was down in NXT. And then when they called him up to do the tour, I got to work with him. We had never worked before. Mm. And I got to work with him his first tour in WWE. And it was just fun because he was my friend. My friend, and also at the same time, we became enemies. You know, it was one of those big rivalries. And usually when you work with somebody that you know, you usually tend to hit a little harder because you have more confidence in what you guys are doing together. And I just had, you know, amazing chemistry with him in the matches that we had. And it was fun to be able to, you know, watch him, you know, grow as a wrestler and as a person and now who he became later on. And it was just fun to be able to, you know, help him in that sense to, you know, I guess, show him the ropes in WWE because it was different from working down in Mexico.
Yeah. So at the end of 2019, you asked for your release, you were granted your release. Mm-hmm. What was the thought process going into this? What was the plan after you got released?
Well, let me tell you first a little bit. I put out my release November 11th of 2019. We were in Vienna, Austria, in the middle of a wrestling tour. A European tour, and the thought process wasn't because I wanted to. It wasn't one thing that I decided one day and I'm leaving. That's it, you know, that week or whatever. It took me a few years to actually, you know, digest everything and put everything in thought and if I really wanted to take that decision. And it was tough because me being a young kid from El Paso, from Juarez, and having this amazing dream of working for the biggest company, and then. When the time comes when you don't want to be there anymore, it's like, how did I get from there to here now? You know, and in that thought process and in my heart, And it was tough to realize that, you know, that they didn't really care about me anymore, that I wasn't, you know, in that, I guess, line of people that they really wanted to help to accomplish a lot of things in the company. And I remember thinking, like, and calling a few of my friends and praying and saying, is this the right decision for my life, for my career, for what I want to do? And everybody pointed out to the same thing, you know, like, it's not about the money. It's about being happy. It's about, you know, doing things in your life that you really, you know, are going to feel, you know, that you're achieving things in your life. And I remember a story one time, and it really broke my heart, because I don't want to get emotional, but I came in and I had a match, and then my daughter, she was like, "Dad, how come you always lose?" And that was tough, man. I didn't know what to say to her. It was actually like, I didn't know what to say to her. I was like, "Oh no, don't." I remember I was like, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's just my job, baby. Like, I get paid the same." I said something like that. I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
It was really tough to be able to tell your kids, you know, that it's the business, that it's not actually, you know, because of who we am. If it was actually because of this, then it's different. but it's entertainment. I understand it. But it was tough. And then, so when I took the decision, I was completely done. I'll say, I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah,
I'm done with this. I'm done with the politics. You know, it's not about talent anymore. It's not about, you know, having a great body, nothing like that. Because they give a bunch of excuses. Oh, you got to get in shape. Look at Kalisto. He's in shape. What has he done? Nothing. Unfortunately, you know, so it's just a lot of things. And when I actually took the decision, I was completely just like done and say, okay, it's time for me to actually put out my feelings out there. Because I've always been a very private person in that sense. If you look at my social media, the things that I put out there, I never talk about my personal life, because it's tough. And I don't want people to know everything about me, because that's my personal life. But then again, like in this world nowadays, it's tough, because sometimes people start judging you for the things that you do, or maybe, oh, he thinks he's better than this guy, that's why he asked for his release, or he, look at his ego, or this and that. It's not about ego. They say your ego is not your amigo. So
that's
so
a good t-shirt. I like that.
Yeah. So imagine that. So it wasn't about that. It was just that I wasn't getting, you know, the opportunities that I thought I deserved. Obviously, people think differently, but I think I was there for a lot of years, and I helped a lot of the guys, and I had nothing against that. You know, I've always been a team player, whatever they asked me to do, but it was time for me to actually, you know, leave. And I wasn't, you know, I didn't want the whole pie, but I wanted a piece of the pie. Sure. That's how I said, you know? And it was tough to be able to realize that nothing was going to happen. And when I took the decision, I was happy with it. I was happy with it. And I, obviously, they didn't like it, because I posted it on social media, because I did a press release in Mexico, but I had to, because they were not listening to me. I went to talk to a lot of people. Everybody would throw the ball here and there, and nothing would never really happen. So for me, I'm just talking about me, you know, it was the best decision for me to be able to, you know, let them know how I felt.
So what was the plan after that? I mean, obviously then you could do whatever you wanted, and then a worldwide pandemic hits with COVID.
Well, I already had a lot of dates set up, you know, to go to different places and work here, work there. And then everything stopped like a week later after I got my release. And it was just like, what am I going to do now? Like, this is my limit. This is what I do. Probably I'm not getting a check anymore every week like I used to.
Yeah.
So I had to, you know, start thinking about other sources of income, you know, and I started working with a company here, a solar company here in El Paso, promoting them. And then I started working with my brother at a construction company that we built together also. And then a lot of few different things. And then, so I was just trying to do other things, but you know, throughout this whole process of like you're saying, like what was next for me?
Yeah,
I thought that I could never survive outside WWE. That's the thought process when you're there. Like, am I gonna be able to survive? Am I able to this and that? Because obviously, you know, having that that security income, it's a blessing. But then again, like when that doesn't make you happy anymore, you're not enjoying it, then all that doesn't mean anything. And for me, it didn't mean anything. And then when everything came about, like the pandemic, and then seeing all these people that I love, you know, not be here anymore because of COVID, it was tough. And I was putting a lot of things in perspective. And I realized that the material stuff didn't matter anymore. All this that we have back here, the mask, doesn't matter anymore. This doesn't matter. What matters is what's in the heart and being healthy. and I'm healthy. My kids are healthy. The people that I love are healthy. And that's the main thing for me right now. Is just focusing on what's going to be in the future in wrestling. You know, a lot of things are opening up now, and a lot of promoters are starting to call. And I just have to be patient, you know, for that opportunity. Work hard like I did before I got the opportunity to do my trial with the company. It took me 10 years, but I did it. You know, I ended up, you know, working for the biggest company for 10 years also. So I'm very happy about that. And that's the main thing right now, trying to keep myself in that mood of like training and keep myself motivated. And right now I'm writing a couple books. So I'm excited about that also.
Do you still get any sort of residual checks from WWE, video games, DVDs, anything like that?
I got one this past month. I was like, what? I didn't know.
Like at you, that's great.
Yeah, it's a blessing, you know, because obviously, you know, I put tracing kind of for 7 years and why not? I think we're very underpaid, to be honest, as performers in what we do. And if I can get a little bit, then why not, you know?
Yeah, growing up in El Paso, living in El Paso now, how much did Eddie Guerrero influence you?
Well, I think a lot, you know, a lot for a lot of us still does, still to this day. People talk about him here in El Paso, wherever you go, and people that mention wrestling always mention his name. So I remember imagine this kid. I was 8 years old. He was 18 years old when he debuted in Ciudad Juarez. And I remember that there was Josué Neri Santos in Ciudad Juarez, it has like a second level. And when you were in the second level, you could sit down and you could see like in this little areas where they had the locker rooms, and Eddie would come outside and watch the match, and he would stand outside like this, and we would just be looking and trying to say hi to him, and he would wave to us and things like that. So I had a lot of fun memories of when he was this young kid in Ciudad Juarez trying to make it in the business. And then all of a sudden, you know, he left to Japan, he left to ECW, he left to WCW, and then he became this amazing star in WWE. And for us, it was an honor to be able to, you know, say that he was from El Paso, Ciudad Juarez, because I used to watch him as a little kid. Now he's making it in the big time. And before he passed away, I remember Hector Rincon, one of his best friends from high school, I told him, hey, you think you can give Eddie a video of me where I can do, you know, so maybe he can, you know, help me out to see if I can get a trial with a company or I don't know how it works, you know. Nowadays, kids have social media. That's a great thing. Back in the day, they didn't have social media. So Hector told me, yeah, get it together and I'll give it to him. So I was trying to get it together. And then unfortunately, you know, a few months after that, he passed away. So I never got an opportunity to really talk to him or meet him in person. We never had a conversation, but the influence that he left for a lot of us are still here. You know, you can see it. And I'm going to show you something. It's really cool.
Please. Yeah. Oh, this is exciting.
This mask. It's, I don't know if you know that Eddie was Black Tiger in Japan.
Yeah.
This was an actual mask that Eddie wore in Japan.
That's his mask.
That's his mask. That's your mask. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I got it to a friend of mine that worked with him for a lot of years, and he gave it to me as a present. He was like, hey, I want you to have it because I know you love Eddie and you love what he has done in his career. So I have a few things of Eddie that I really, you know, hold dear to my heart.
Wow. Because,
you know, to this day, he still influences a lot of the people here in La Frontera. To this day, they still talk about him. They want to do murals about him still. They want to do a lot of things, you know, to keep him alive. And it's awesome to be able to, you know, realize that, you know, he was from here. He went to Jefferson High School. He wrestled at Josué Neri Santos. I used to, you know, wait outside in the auditorium in Juarez, and I used to wait for the wrestlers to get in. And I would ask them, hey, can I carry your bag? So I would carry their bags into the locker room and then get in and then go out and watch the matches. That's that, you know, because I was in love with wrestling, and I got to, you know, meet a lot of the great stars, and I know a lot of those people. And especially nowadays, like when I talk to a lot of the kids, they obviously admire the career that Eddie had. And for us, it's an honor to be able to say that he's from El Paso, Ciudad Juarez.
You know, a lot of masked wrestlers will obviously think about Rey Mysterio. So there's obviously a lot of comparisons between you and Rey. Mm-hmm. What does Rey mean to you and to your career?
Rey has also a lot of influence in a lot of us, and especially me, especially in the beginning of my career. Like I have to find some pictures, but I remember that I used to watch a lot of the magazines where Rey used to come out, and his outfit used to have like these arrows in his leggings. And I remember that I used to do something similar to that. And then he was the first one that actually like started changing the colors of the mask and the trends and all that stuff. So that's where I got the idea of me like doing different outfits. When I remember Halloween Havoc with him and Eddie Guerrero, that was an amazing match. Yeah. The outfit that Rey had, the purple one, I did something similar, but in red, when I wrestled Nicho for the title, for the WWE world title in Ciudad Juarez. So it was in honor of Rey Mysterio. So he had a lot of influence in a lot of us and still to this day. And then when I got to meet him for the first time in person, man, he's the nicest guy that you could ever meet in your life. That guy doesn't have nothing bad about him in his body and his bone, not even in his soul, nothing. He's just an amazing person. You know, when my son turned 8 years old, I remember I told him, hey, we're going to go to California. I was like, what do you want to go? Legoland, this and that. He's like, no, Dad, take me to Rey Mysterio's house. That's what he told me. And I'm like, how do you know he lives in California? I was like, oh, because I saw the video. Remember they had like a little documentary out of his home and things like
that?
And I was like, man, I was in shock. I was like, all right. So then when I went to California, I called Rey. He's like, hey, man, you think? He's like, yeah, come on over. So he sent me his address. We went over to his house, and he just treated my son like royalty, man. He gave him a tour of his house. He gave him like action figures. He gave him an original mask sign and everything. And so he's just he's a great person, man. And I think a lot of guys look up to him in that sense. Not maybe, you know, sometimes that when you want to know somebody that it's your idol, sometimes you get very, I guess you get the opposite of what you thought that person was, or maybe you get very, it happened to me with one wrestler that I thought he was an amazing guy. And then I met him, he was a jerk, and that was it. I was like, man. And then with Rey, no, you tend to love him more once you get to know him, you know, because he's just a great person.
You know, it's obviously been a tough year for a lot of people. And I'm really curious to know, what have you learned about yourself over this last year dealing with COVID?
Well, the first thing that I learned is that I can survive outside WWE, that there's life after that for a lot of the boys, because I think they're afraid of actually, you know, even if they're happy in the company, they're afraid of actually telling how they feel or what they want to do, because they think there's nothing else after that. There is. Yeah. There's life after that. And I really, I think what I've learned is that I love my kids more than anything in the world, that I've been able to, you know, get to know them. And I never thought that that this tough guy tattooed up would be combing his daughter in the morning, putting her in a little ponytail. And I learned that I could do a lot of things that I wasn't used to doing it. And that I just want to continue living. I just want to continue doing positive things in life with the people and motivating people and letting them know that no matter what happens in your life, God has a plan, and we all have something that we can, you know, love and we can try to accomplish and continue working for that goal, no matter what the situation, no matter, you know, how hard we think that they're not going to get out. We will. And I can tell you that because I've lived that. Also, I think I've been a little more, let my feelings more out there than before. I was very close-minded in that sense, that I'm like holding everything back and not saying how I felt or not saying, you know, what really goes on. And for me, I think I've let go of that taboo of like when you grow up, oh, you got to be tough. You can't cry because you're a man and all those little things, you know? And for me, I've learned that, you know, letting all that emotion out, it's going to help. It's only going to make you better. It's not going to make me less of a man because I say that I cry or because I say that I miss, you know, my kids or this and that. At the end of the day, every time I see my kids, I always tell them, I love you. I love them. I love them every time. And I think for me, I've learned that, I'm more sentimental than I thought that I was. So it's good.
You know, in talking about life after WWE, would you want to go to AEW?
I want to go wherever they want me, to be honest. That's the main thing for me. For me, it's if you really want me to be part of your company, if you really want me to be part of what you're doing, I'm here for that. You know, I'm all in. All in. I've always been like that. I'm a person that does things, either does them or doesn't do them. I cannot do things halfway.
Yeah.
And I think if AEW wants me, if they want to call, we can definitely, you know, talk. I'm not, you know, against anything, but I do just want to you know, reaffer that I want to be a place where they really want me, want to give me an opportunity to succeed and do the things that I want to do. Just let me wrestle. That's all I want to do. Just pure wrestle, man. Just let me wrestle everybody.
Let's hope the world can get back to normal where we can watch you wrestle all the time too.
Yeah. I'm excited for that. You know, things are starting to open up a little bit. I already got my vaccine. I got vaccinated already and, you know, trying to be responsible in every sense of that I can be, especially with this pandemic. And I just want to be able to, you know, continue my career and continue working, continue wrestling. No politics. Put politics aside, let me just work with everybody. Let me wrestle.
Yeah. This has been so insightful, finding out about the man behind the mask. Thank you so much. I just have one final question for you and every interview talking about, oh no, he's gone.
No, I'm here, my bad.
He's back. I end every interview talking about gratitude because gratitude is such an important thing in my life. And I say that if you can be grateful, you'll live a great life. So I'm curious, what are three things that you're grateful for in your life right now?
My kids, my health, and my parents.
There we go.
Because the way you treat your parents is the way, you know, it reflects who you are as a person. And that's very true. No matter where you go, you know, it's in my life, you know, throughout my life, no matter what has happened, no matter what my parents, there have always been people that have supported me throughout my life, through my career. My kids are starting to understand a lot of things in my life now, of what I've done in my career, you know, and I think that's the main thing for me, being able to keep those people that I love close to me and to understand sometimes the decisions that I make are tough, but it's for the best in my life.
Yeah, those are three great things. Thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to seeing you back in the ring soon.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Thanks again for finally, you know, getting together and talking. And anytime you want to talk, let's get together and chat a little more.
We'll do this one in person next time.
Orale, you got it, brother.
Thank you so much.
Stay safe.
Well, there we go. Huge thank you to Cinta de Oro for the great conversation. Man, that guy's so much charisma. And a big thank you to you as well for being on this audio adventure with us. Share this with a friend. Snap a screenshot. Let us know what spoke to you the most from this. Tag us, follow us on social media. I'm at Chris Van Vliet. He is at Cinta de Oro. And in case you're wondering, because this was just the audio version, yeah, he's wearing a mask during the interview. And of course, you can check out this interview and every interview on my YouTube channel and also my secondary YouTube channel. You can check out clips from all these conversations, CVV clips. As C.S. Lewis once said, you can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending. Be great. Be grateful, my friends. We'll see you on the next one for some more insight.